Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Looking to step up your Mother's Day flowers? The Home Depot has an idea. Let Mom's green thumb do some digging with colorful flowers, pots, and premium soils to bring out the most in her patios, walkways, and gardens. Right now, get Vigoro potting soil, just $8.97 for strong, healthy, vibrant plants indoors and outside. Shop our wide selection online and pick up your order in-store and give Mom the gift of a beautiful garden. Get Vigoro potting soil, just $8.97 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Joe McCormick, and today we're finally getting around to it. We wanted to talk about a few of the Ig Nobel Prize winners from this year. Yes, we're a little late. The award ceremony was in September of this year, and we're just now getting to it. But, you know, a lot of things are happening around then. September, October, it's a busy time for us.
Yeah, I think we've covered the Ig Nobels every year since we started covering them, and I'm not sure when that year was. Maybe it was like 2007, 2008 or something. I don't know. It's pretty early on. We almost never cover them right away because, like you say, there's generally a lot going on. The awards usually come out during September or very early October, and so we're either wrapped up in Halloween stuff by then, or we're getting ready to do Halloween stuff, or something like that. So we generally come in like late November sometime in November, or in this case, very early December. But I guess it's better late than never. And I guess one of the cool things about this is we kind of come in after the initial coverage and chew on them a bit more.
So if you're waiting on these episodes and you're inclined to complain, just don't stop. But if you're not familiar, the Ig Nobels are a series of awards given out once a year by a scientific humor journal called The Annals of Improbable Research. That's been edited for many years now by somebody named Mark Abrahams. And the stated purpose of these awards is to, quote, honor achievements that first make people laugh and then make them think. So to give you an idea, if you haven't heard one of these episodes before and you've never read about the Ig Nobels, among the awards we covered last year, there was a prize in the material science category for research into whether you could make a knife blade out of frozen feces. What was the verdict on that? I think it was no, right? That no matter how hard you freeze them, they just don't really cut.
I believe so. It reminds me of, I think that the research ended up saying, yeah, like, you know, no matter how hard it gets, you're still going to have a certain amount of melting that's going to take place.
Right. Cause the friction on the sharp end will pretty quickly wear it away. And then it's blunt.
Yeah. Better to make a frozen poop warhammer, I think.
Though that could shatter. I don't know.
True.
We'll look into that in the future. But then, let's see, what was in it? One of the other ones we did last year was there was a prize in the acoustics category for a study that made alligators huff helium to see if it made their voices higher pitched.
I remember that, yeah.
So occasionally the papers that get selected for these prizes are, I think, originally themselves intended to be satirical or funny. One example of, like that that comes to mind is there was a rheology study one year about whether cats should be considered a solid or a liquid. That, mm-hmm. that was a good one. But clearly there was a good bit of jokiness about the paper itself. Most of the time, actually, the research covered in these prizes is it's just straightforward research. They're straightforward experiments published in real scientific journals that happen to have some weirdly hilarious methodology or finding.
Yeah, either, you know, it varies, but, you know, sometimes it's just a particular experiment that is hilarious or giggle-inducing. Other times it's just the minutia of it, you know, one of those, it's kind of a shrimp on a treadmill situation where it's still important work. It's all part of the general, expansion of scientific knowledge of the universe. But it's just in an area that we might not think about. Sometimes it's just an important study that involves like poop or vomit or something. And therefore just by or cheese or something, you know, just by virtue of the subject
awkward
matter,
kissing
is inherently funny.
Now in these episodes we're doing on the Ig Nobels, we're just going to pick out a few of the prizes to highlight because there was something about them that we wanted to talk about. We're not going to have a chance to cover all of the winners, but if you want to read about those, you can go to the Annals of Improbable Research website at improbable.com and you can see the full list of the awards and click on links to read about them.
I mean, not only the most recent awards, but you can go back through the entire history of the Ig Nobels and explore them all. It's a very simple, easy-to-use website.
Well, I am ready to get started if you are, Rob.
Let's do it.
Okay, well, the first area I wanted to get into was actually, this will be a pair of thematically linked prizes from this year. The first is the 2021 Physics Prize, which went to Alessandro Corbetta, Jasper Mayusen, Chungmin Lee, Roberto Benzi, and Federico Tosci, quote, for conducting experiments to learn why pedestrians do not constantly collide with other pedestrians. And then the second here is the Kinetics Prize, which went to Hisashi Murakami, Claudio Feliciani, Yuta Nishiyama, and Katsuhiro Nishinari. And this is, quote, for conducting experiments to learn why pedestrians do sometimes collide with other pedestrians. Rob, have you ever had a really memorable, just bodily head-on with somebody? I was trying to remember if I had, and I could not bring any instances to mind, though I have run into plenty of things in my life. I've run into tree branches and sliding glass doors, but I can't really think of any head-ons with humans, except maybe while playing soccer.
Yeah, thinking back, yeah, certainly there have been more than a few low-hanging branches that have clipped the top of my head or tried to stab me in the eye, that sort of thing. But in terms of running into people, even in crowded cities, like I was just in New Orleans, mm-hmm. and you know those are some crowded streets at times, and those are also some drunken streets at times. Mm-hmm. You know, there are folks wandering around in various states of inebriation, and yet you don't see people just colliding with each other. I feel like I can think maybe to some close calls in the past where you have that moment where you almost run into somebody and you both kind of acknowledge it and it's a little bit awkward. But mm-hmm. still, it's not like you see, I guess, in a lot of like comedy films where people just plow into each other, knock their groceries down, and then they have a romantic moment as they pick up each other's groceries, that sort of thing.
Yes. Why is it romantic comedies where people plow into each other? I guess there's something metaphorical about that, about, you know, you came into my life like a large mass of meat slamming me in the face.
Yeah. Yeah. Because in general, you don't see like fights breaking out because people ran into each other. Mm-hmm. Or at least I don't think I've ever seen that occur. It probably has occurred, but not with the regularity you might expect, given just how intense streets and sidewalks are at times.
Yeah, and I think this is something we should keep in mind as we discuss this research. It's interesting how rare collisions are, given how often huge masses of people are just crisscrossing with each other all day. So to actually reference the two papers here, the first one was Corbetta et al. This was in Physical Review E in 2018, and it was called Physics-Based Modeling and Data Representation of Pairwise Interactions Among Pedestrians. And then the second paper, the Kinetics Prize, was called Mutual Anticipation Can Contribute to Self-Organization in Human Crowds. This was by Murakami et al. In 2021 in Science Advances. Now, I was interested in this pair of findings, not only because I was obviously amused by the image of people just absolutely eating each other's teeth in high-speed sidewalk collisions, but because this is one of those Ig Nobel subjects where once you get beyond the mildly funny image it conjures, it actually raises quite deep, mysterious, fascinating questions about the emergent mathematical properties of human behavior in groups. And it's also a subject that goes way beyond mere curiosity. Understanding the flow of crowds is a matter of life and death. It is a vitally important subject for all kinds of reasons. So this involves questions like, how do masses of people move through space on foot? What rules govern their behavior, both as individuals and as a group? How can that behavior be influenced? And especially, how does the built environment shape that behavior? You know, as you were alluding to a minute ago, I think it's actually kind of amazing how pedestrians can navigate through crowds without running into each other. It's one of those, you know, thousand little miracles of human brain capacity that we don't usually notice or appreciate. But you can have huge crowds moving quickly and bidirectionally, meaning running at cross directions, past each other, straight through each other, and most of the time people are able to avoid human crashes.
Yeah, and it seems to be the case no matter where you go, even though I will say, and this is just my observation, I don't know to what extent this holds up to research, but it feels like in some parts of the world, the energy of say, movement of crowds on a sidewalk can feel a little bit different, you know? But it's still maintaining, you know, the same collision-free experience, you know, like maybe there's something slightly different going on there. There are different cultural norms in place regarding, say, like what side of the sidewalk people moving this way should be on or so forth, or even maybe, you know, how much space is permittable between you and the next person, but still people are managing not to plow into each other.
Yeah, so to discuss a few of the details of these two studies regarding the first one, Corbetta et al. from 2018, I was reading about this in an article that had a few interview clips from NL Times, and this was looking at Technical University Eindhoven researchers Federico Tosci and Alessandro Corbetta. And so their study in particular was looking at the question of how pedestrians avoid running into each other when moving through the Eindhoven train station. And they did this by installing sensors under the platforms of the train station, which they used to track the movements of pedestrians across the platform. So this was an area of like 27 square meters, and they tracked pedestrian movement within it for 6 months. So this came out to measuring the movements of about 5 million pedestrians total. And they found a few measurable quantities. So first of all, they said that people keep an average distance of about 75 centimeters away from other people while moving through crowds. So that's about 2.5 feet. And they said that about 1 out of every 1,000 people, quote, will turn around and go back the way they came to avoid bumping into somebody else. According to Alessandro Corbetta, quote, about 80 of the pedestrians actually collided with each other. The other pedestrians adjusted their walking route when they were at least 140 centimeters, which is about 4 feet and 7 inches apart, and thus managed to avoid a collision. And though I was wondering about that, so he gives the number 80 pedestrians collided. Does that mean 80 pedestrians total, meaning roughly 40 collisions, or is that like there were 80 collisions, which would make you think there'd be like at least 160 people involved. I'm not sure.
Well, it raises the question, how many people are necessary to create a collision? Is it one or is it two?
It's at least two. I mean, you could have more, I guess.
But I guess it depends on, like, is it negligence on one person's part that leads to collision, or negligence or distraction, whatever, on two people's parts, you know?
Ah, well, that will actually come up in the other study, I think. But what this study found is that, yeah, people are constantly monitoring for upcoming collisions and then adjusting their walking trajectories accordingly, several meters in advance. So ultimately, the question here is, it's not really relevant exactly how many people slammed faces, but how, on average, pedestrians adjust their courses to avoid collisions. What rules do they use to make those evasions? And this just apparently happens constantly. We're usually not even aware of it. But, you know, I can recall, like, moving through an airport or something, you are just doing a delicate dance for several minutes of at a time often, you know, just dodging, and you don't even really think about it.
Mm-hmm. It's a process that can be oddly captivating, I find, you know, especially if I'm on my own. I don't have to worry about anyone else, you know, traveling with me. You know, cutting a swath for them to travel through, you know, checking back on how they're doing. If it's just me cutting through like a reasonable sized crowd or a reasonable flow of pedestrian traffic, it feels kind of empowering.
Well, yeah, it is. And I think that highlights one of the interesting features there, which is that so when you're moving through a crowd, you are making individual decisions, like, and those decisions are being driven by different things. Like, on one hand, you've got your basic propulsive drive, like you have where you need to be and the course you think you need to take to get there. And then probably the second main thing governing your movement is what these researchers would refer to as social forces, which would be things like the taboo against touching other people while you're walking, or basically the force that keeps you separate from other people and makes you want to avoid running into them or touching them in some other way.
Yeah, because there's a physical risk to actually running into somebody, and there is a social risk to not only running into somebody, but even almost running into somebody.
Yeah, even getting too close, exactly. Mm-hmm. But so while those forces are guiding your decision making as an individual, you are a thinking person, and you know, there are cognitive inputs, like you are moving through this crowd as an individual. It's strange that take thousands of people and they're all making these individual decisions based on these types of forces, you know, their drive forces and their restrictive social forces. And yet, when you look at them as a group, they seem to behave in ways that are predictable, even though they're making in these individual decisions. They behave in ways that can quite well be modeled and predicted and understood by things that are like physics models, the same way that you would model, say, the movements of a fluid, or, you know, a gas or a liquid through a container.
Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples.
Rob, as the local host with allergies here, they sent you some of their nasal spray to treat your allergies. What was your experience like?
Yeah, that's right. I always wrestle with the pollen a bit when it rolls in during the spring. So they sent me the little nasal spray. I tried out the product and yeah, it sure did help me get on top of my symptoms for the day. And it's so fast acting, it was already kicking in before I left the house.
Astapro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Astapro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astapro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing.
Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astapro. Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can get Astapro and go today. Astepro allergy.com. Astapro and go. Use this directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it.
And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay. Picture this, it's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road, any road, the steeper the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.
And so the authors of this first study are saying, well, by studying the natural movement patterns of pedestrians and trying to model them in terms of the language of physics on a large scale, this can be useful in terms of things like architecture and design. You know, you can design better spaces for people to walk, both in terms of efficiency, the throughput, how many people can move through them quickly, but also in terms of safety, because as we know, and as I'll talk about in a bit, crowds can become quite dangerous when density gets too high. Now, I was also reading an article that had a few quotes from these researchers, and this was an article for Physics, the magazine of the American Physical Society, by Michael Sherber. And this one also discussed the second winner, the winner of the Kinetics Prize, the paper that was by Murakami et al. And this study was interesting, too. So it, instead of putting sensors under a floor and measuring natural movement, it staged experiments. So this study asked volunteers to walk bidirectionally. So imagine people crossing each other, walking in opposite directions, the way they would at, say, like a crowded crosswalk in a street. And then it tried to see what happens when people walk bidirectionally under normal circumstances, and then what happens when some of those people are distracted, specifically what happens when they're trying to do calculations on their phones. And the purpose of this experiment was to interfere with people's ability to see collisions coming and avoid them. Now, it probably won't come as a big surprise that pedestrians who were distracted by phones made more navigation mistakes, leading to a number of near collisions. But even when not distracted, people sometimes had difficulty. And one of the implications of this experiment is that avoiding collisions is a collaborative effort. It requires awareness and coordination of multiple parties, both looking at each other and trying to assess what paths they're about to take, and then adjusting their own paths accordingly. And this becomes difficult when even just one of these parties is distracted, especially if multiple parties are distracted. I was also reading an interview with one of the researchers from the second study, the Kinetics Prize. This was on a Swiss news site, swissinfo.ch, and it was an interview by Zeno Socatelli with a researcher named Claudio Feliciani, who works at the University of Tokyo, but who originally hails from Switzerland. And so Feliciani mentioned a few interesting things in this interview. One is that, so when you have people not distracted, how do they tend to move in groups when they're moving bidirectionally? Like, you imagine people crossing two crowds at a busy crosswalk, trying to go past each other. How do they normally move? And Feliciani says that what tends to happen is people automatically self-organize into lines. People tend to naturally follow the person directly in front of them. And simply by obeying this rule, the moving crowd naturally forms into lanes or lines of people. And so they were trying to understand the mechanisms that make these lines form and how they work. Of course, you know, one way to understand how something works is to see if you can break it. So Feliciani says, quote, "Specifically, we caused some of the pedestrians to be distracted, asking them to walk while solving simple calculations on their phones. With just 3 out of 54 people focused on something else, rows formed much less quickly, especially if the distracted people were at the front of the group. And the increased attention of the non-distractors is not enough to make up for the lack of attention of the 3 who were distracted." And then on this website, there is actually video I could watch. Maybe you want to take a look, Rob. But there's video that shows how people move in these lines under normal conditions and then what it looks like when just a few of them are distracted. So not everybody is trying to do math on their phone. Just a few people out of the 54 completely screw things up and everybody gets jammed up. The lanes don't form naturally. So it seems like it navigating through crowds bidirectionally, it has this tendency to self-organizing emergent structures to form. But that requires everybody to be paying attention and monitoring each other and sort of communicating non-verbally about where they're headed.
Hmm. This is interesting. I mean, of course, this has huge ramifications on our already, you know, near ubiquitous use of smartphones and the fact that people have them out while they're walking around. But it also makes me wonder about, you know, the more we push into this idea of augmented reality, of having some sort of a metaverse that is digitally imposed on the world around us, what's that going to do? Or does it make it easier? I don't know. Like, I can maybe imagine the case being made that, like, well, you're not looking at your screen, you're looking at the world around you for this information, which you were probably already doing and potentially distracted by just as a normal pedestrian pre-smartphone.
Well, I mean, it is yet another one of those things where we have surprisingly powerful capacities, you know, like we can do things that are kind of amazing if you sit and think about them, like walking through crowds without collisions or driving a car. But we also fail to have the metacognitive recognition of how much attention it takes to do that correctly. Mm-hmm. So you have people not realizing how impaired they are when they're texting while driving, or not quite appreciating how quickly this entire crosswalk will get jammed up if just a couple people are distracted while they're walking. But anyway, I just got really interested in the subject of the modeling of the flow of human crowds. One idea that I found very sticky is I was looking at a paper from 2003 in the annual review of fluid mechanics by Roger L. Hughes, who worked in the Department of Civil and Environmental Engineering at the University of Melbourne. And the paper is called The Flow of Human Crowds. And he was discussing the idea that human movements could be modeled like the flow of non-human substances, you know, just like molasses flowing out of a jar, or like the way particles of gas move around in a container. But of course, it's complicated by the fact that there are social inputs on the movement. Even if the movement can be modeled like the movement of a physical substance at the large scale, and he ended up characterizing crowds as the field of, quote, thinking fluids, which is just wonderful. So this isn't related to either of the prize winners I was just talking about, but I ended up reading another really interesting article on the subject of physical and mathematical modeling of crowd flow. And this was an article in Smithsonian Magazine from January 2017 by Evelyn Lamb. It was called How Fluid Dynamics Can Help You Navigate Crowds. And so the premise of this article is that because the flow of human crowds can be modeled like the flow of physical substances, physics modeling can also offer suggestions to individual members of crowds for how to move through them in the safest and best way, at least potentially. I mean, there's a lot of uncertainty. This, I guess, is kind of a young scientific field right now, but it could potentially offer individual advice in addition to the stuff we already talked about, like informing how to better design spaces for people to walk through. And so, of course, this article mentions some of the same research we already talked about, such as the idea that moving crowds tend to form these self-organizing natural lanes or lines, often just by a rule as simple as you directly follow the person ahead of you. But then this article goes on to cite a few researchers offering some other observations. So one thing is it cites a researcher named Dirk Helbing, who is at the Swiss Federal Institute of Technology in Zurich and who studies computational social science. I just noticed, I wonder if there's like a big center of crowd flow study in Switzerland, because several of these papers have had Swiss connections of one kind or another.
Hmm.
So springing off of some stuff that Helbing says here, Lamb actually highlights a couple of the main governing forces that appear to drive the individual behaviors of people within crowds. And I think they sort of line up with what we were talking about a minute ago. So on one hand, you've got a force that propels the person toward their goal. They're trying to get somewhere. And then second, you've got these social forces that prevent them from doing something, mostly prevent them from colliding with other people in the crowd. And regarding that second force, the social force, I thought this was really interesting. The article makes the case that it is similar to the repulsive force that keeps particles from colliding, but like physical particles. And in the case of physical, like atoms and molecules, this would be the electromagnetic force. Electrons, of course, repel one another. They've got like charges. They push back against each other. And in the case of particles, you can actually calculate the strength of the repulsive force via what's known as the inverse square law. So the inverse square law is a very important mathematical principle that applies throughout physics. Basically, it applies to any quantity of energy or force propagating out from a central source in three dimensions. And it says that that quantity will decrease not just in a linear way as you move away from the source, but it will decrease according to the square of the distance between you and the source. So a simpler way to conceptualize this is that when you're thinking about light intensity or gravity or electromagnetic repulsive forces between particles, proximity really matters, and a force that is almost undetectable at a distance can become very strong as you get close. So this is true of particles avoiding collisions in flowing masses of liquid or gas, but it's also true of humans moving in a crowd, though in a slightly different way. And then the article calls attention to a paper that made a really interesting discovery back in 2014. So this paper was by Ioannis Karamoutsis, Brian Skinner, and Stephen J. Guy in Physical Review Letters, called Universal Power Law Governing Pedestrian Interactions. And the authors summarize their findings like this. They say, quote, "Here we introduce a novel statistical mechanical approach to directly measure the interaction energy between pedestrians. This analysis, when applied to a large collection of human motion data, reveals a simple power law interaction that is based not on the physical separation between pedestrians, but on their projected time to a future collision, and is therefore fundamentally anticipatory in nature." So this really got me. So there is a rule in operation just automatically in moving human crowds that works somewhat like the inverse square law for the repulsion between particles in a fluid, but it's a repulsion based not just on physical proximity, it's based on the anticipation of movement pathways. So you can think about it this way. If you're in a big crowd of people and you're moving along on the sidewalk, you can actually be very close to another person. So you can be walking beside somebody, parallel, side by side. Or you can even be pretty close to the person ahead of you or behind you walking in the same direction. Where you have to adjust your path to avoid a collision is when you notice that your path is about to cross somebody else's. And we calculate these adjustments not purely in terms of distance, but in terms of time. The variable is time to collision based on the current speed of your movement. And people are typically anticipating about 1 to 3 seconds into the future, depending on the characteristics of the crowd. Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay. Picture this, it's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road, any road, the steeper the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
So people use these rules pretty reliably to move in crowds, and as we've said already, they can usually avoid collisions. But there are some situations where the rules stop working, particularly as the density of the crowd increases. The higher the density, the more your collision avoidance skills are overwhelmed and different principles take over. And sometimes, unfortunately, these situations can turn very dangerous. People are killed in crowds all the time at everything from music festivals to religious events. And I think a lot of times when people read reporting about deaths through crowd crush and crowd dynamics, I think a lot of times people fail to understand exactly what's happening in these situations. Like, they sometimes seem to imagine that this must result from the crowds being somehow evil, like violent or malicious or chaotic, or at least the news reporting on these events sometimes has that kind of tone. And this is not necessarily the case at all. People in large crowds can easily be injured or killed simply by the uncontrollable flow of human bodies through space. Like, you don't have to imagine people in the crowd wanting to trample each other. There are irresistible physical forces at work.
Like, you could essentially have a large mass of people attending a rally about the importance of crowd safety.
Right.
And if it were not managed properly, it could result in injury.
Right, yeah. So say maybe you're trying to quickly move a huge mass of people and they're moving through a corridor that's originally 100 meters wide and then suddenly it narrows to 5 meters wide. This could spell disaster. And you can also imagine scenarios where, you know, especially at events that are attracting big crowds, non-crowd flow dynamics can have exactly the wrong incentives for how to shape those spaces, right? Like, maybe at a big music festival or something, you want to have choke points that control access to spaces, maybe so that you can check for tickets or who knows what. But it's exactly at areas where there are things like bottlenecks, where suddenly the density of the crowd increases dramatically and unexpectedly, that things can really get dangerous. And researchers in this field studying crowd flow have actually looked at a lot of video documentation to come up with models to try to understand what happens when crowd flow becomes deadly. And the article here discusses a few observations in this area, though it's quick to caveat, and I guess we should too, that we can't give you, you know, the hard and fast rules to follow that will always keep you safe, because there's still a lot that's not known about exactly how this happens. But there are a few things that seem probably true. One of them, again, obviously, is that density seems to be a major contributor to when crowds get dangerous, that, you know, if a pathway suddenly narrows at a tunnel or a bridge or something. And the article describes how increasing density in these types of areas can lead to something called stop and go waves, where people can no longer keep moving continuously forward. They're used to walking, and then they eventually reach a point where the crowd is so dense that even at low speeds, they can't keep moving forward, so they stop. And then once they're stopped, they move forward, but of course people are still trying to move in behind them. So they're stopped, people are advancing behind them, and they tend to move forward into any gaps as soon as they appear. Stop-and-go waves are not always necessarily dangerous, but they can be an indication that crowd density is getting too high. And then to read from Lamb's description of what happens after this here, quote, "Things get really dangerous if the crowd continues to get denser or people make unexpected movements. At that point, the crowd can become turbulent and chaotic, with people being pushed randomly in different directions. Disasters can break out when, say, one person stumbles, causing someone else to be pushed into their place and either trampling them or stumbling themselves. And this hole can have a kind of gravitational effect, pulling in more and more people." Which, in terms of the physical dynamics, this is similar to how the flow of physical substances like water behave when they're funneled into narrower and narrower places. Like, I think about how some of the world's most dangerous whirlpools seem to occur in bottlenecks for the flow of water, where, for example, the tide is pushing a huge amount of water through a narrow strait or fjord. This can lead to rushing and turbulence. It's chaotic flow in unpredictable directions, which can sometimes create these whirlpools. Anyway, back to the article, it mentions a couple of other seeming risk factors for when this happens. In addition to the high density, another one is bidirectional or multidirectional flow. So things can get more dangerous if you have high density and people trying to move in different directions. And then finally, Lamb cites the researcher Ioannis Karamoutsis, who is one of the authors on that paper from 2014 I mentioned a minute ago, saying that in large enclosed spaces, for some reason, the sides of the space seem possibly to be more dangerous than the middle, though there isn't enough research to be sure of that or to explain why it happens. So obviously, understanding the flow of crowds goes way beyond just being a kind of interesting little curiosity and like looking at how people move. It is something that is of critical importance in managing, you know, large masses of people and in designing spaces for them to move through and in planning events and all kinds of things like that. I mean, this is like one of those things that starts off being really funny, but is in fact a critically important subject.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. There are just going to be more and more of us, and these large events of you know, varying genres are going to continue to be a part of our life.
This actually got me wondering about something, which is why doesn't anything like uncontrollable crowd flow with actual like pressing against one another happen with cars? So you can see some of the characteristics happen with cars because you can get traffic back up when there's a bottleneck in the highway, maybe seven lanes suddenly go down to one, and this will cause a huge traffic jam. But you don't usually have the problem of like cars pushing each other and pressing against one another and leading to this buildup of uncontrollable forces. And I was wondering why that is. Maybe I'm just guessing. I wonder if it's because it's never considered acceptable for cars to touch each other at all. And people, of course, mostly try to avoid touching one another in crowds. But in some situations, maybe it just seems like there's no avoiding it. So you just sort of resign yourself to touching and then that can build up. Maybe. I'm not sure.
No, that's a good point. Yeah, because even though some drivers do like to come as close as possible to touching your car, which is something I've never been able to understand, just, you know, given how dangerous it actually is to, you know, to pull up right behind somebody at high speeds on the interstate. To your point, you're not actually supposed to ram into them even a little bit. And while I, you know, certainly pileups do occur, you do have accidents, you do have cars crashing into one another, and then, you know, multiple car pileups occurring. I wonder if this stricter no touch policy with cars has some sort of influence on this.
Well, yeah, maybe another thing is I'm not conceptualizing it right. Maybe the crowd dynamics I was talking about are more analogous to just actual like pile up crashes. I guess, which I wasn't thinking about in a similar way because those happen at higher speeds.
I wonder what we would see in something that's halfway between. Between a car and a person? If we were to say, look at bicycle traffic in very congested bicycle situations, say a city where there's a high number of bicycle riders or something, or bicycle races, because I feel like one of the things with people
segways
is that maybe segways, but I feel like one of the things with people, like you've already mentioned, is when you're pushed forward, you may be pushed into that hole that you could not otherwise occupy or wouldn't occupy socially, but now, you know, you're being pushed. I guess that's where I'm going. Right. So they're just more nooks and crannies for human beings. And then with cars, less so. But perhaps if you're looking at bicycles, like maybe we see something that's more like the human scenario. It'd be interesting to hear from some of our bicyclists out there. Like, what are the social laws of crowded bicycle scenarios? How close can you get to another bicyclist while moving, while stationary, while sort of, tiptoeing along? I'd be interested to hear.
Yeah, totally. I mean, especially, it seems a key difference is the balancing act that's necessary on a bicycle.
Yeah.
Oh, anyway, I want to say about these two subjects, the Physics and Kinetics Prize this year, this definitely did achieve the desired intent. It made me laugh a little bit and then did make me think. It was not, I will grant, it did not make me laugh hilariously. So it was a mild chuckle, but then it got really interesting to me at least.
All right. We're going to go ahead and close this episode out, but we will be back. I'm going to talk about the biology prize. We're going to get into some other prizes from the Ig Nobels this year. So just tune into that in the next core episode of Stuff to Blow Your Mind. To remind everybody, Stuff to Blow Your Mind, the podcast feed can be found wherever you get your podcasts. Core episodes come out on Tuesdays and Thursdays. Monday is listener mail. Wednesday is a short form artifact episode. And on Fridays, we do Weird House Cinema. That's our time to set aside most serious concerns and just focus on a weird film.
Huge thanks, as always, to our excellent audio producer, Seth Nicholas Johnson. If you would like to get in touch with us with feedback on this episode or any other, to suggest a topic for the future, or just to say hello, you can email us at contact@stufftoblowyourmind.com.
Stuff to Blow Your Mind is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.